then, but they're kind of in violation of your regulation. So then you can send them a, you know, nastier note, you know, 15 days before it really expires or something would be a, you know, if you put something in your regulation, that might be a way to kind of take care of that.
I think we'll take that under advisement. I'll cover that a little bit, okay, what I'm going to talk about too. So what I handed out were copies of three internal checklists that you should have all gotten a copy of already previously from Ellen. One is for the 10-year renewals, one's related to new applications, and one's related to transfers. I just gave you a copy of all three. We're going to primarily talk about the 10-year renewals today. I also gave you a copy of the revised application. I don't know if I sent you that before or not, but it may be slightly revised from the version you had previously because we're continuing to work on that to incorporate the new law changes of 1205 and everything.
You still have a misspelling, by the way.
That's entirely possible. So tell me what it is before we leave, and I'll try to fix it. With that said, as Ellen said, we did promise to try to give you a better. The question was, how much would it cost us to do these 10-year renewals? So what we did, and I'm going to give you what I'm calling a Senate bill fiscal impact addendum. We did a fiscal impact to the Senate bill that created all this language about application of 10-year renewals and amended several sections of the code. So this document will talk about how we're going to handle the applications, transfers, and 10-year renewals, but today I'm just going to skip over some of that and just talk really about the 10-year renewal part, and we'll give you a copy of this at the end of the day. You can take home and read for future reference when we talk about applications, beneficial use, transfers, and all that stuff in the future. What we did after the last meeting was we pulled every single renewal from last year, all of 2018. Every lease that we reviewed last year, and there were 294, which we think is about average. I think last month that we did around 300. Or about 30 a month-ish. It came out to be fairly close to that. It's 24.5 per month is what the average is if you do the 294. And what we did was we just pulled the form out that we send currently, or we did in the past, that basically asked some questions. What percent of the lease did you use? How many bushels of shell, culch, seeds, bat did you plant? How many bushels of orchards did you harvest? In the old form said, how many bushels of clams? We've changed that now to number of clams because that's primarily how clams are sold, is by number, not bushel. Some people would mark through it and put numbers. Some would try to convert it and put bushels. But anyway, so we were using the old form. And what we did is we just took it and reassessed them all using the new criteria in the code, 1205, the new language in the 10-year renewal about the benefits of and impacts of shellfish aquaculture, and took, in essence, a more critical look at them than we had in the past. In the past, if somebody put down almost anything on the form, with the way the law was written with the loopholes, you know, we approved them, or usually it was me that was approving them. So we had a previous denial rate in 2018 of 6%. 6% of the leases were denied. And the vast majority of that 6% were people that did not send the form back at all. We never got a form completed. Now, to address what Russ was talking about, in the past, we wouldn't know for sure they hadn't turned their form in until the deadline passed, because we didn't send a second notice. We would send these forms out 90 days before their 10 years was up. And we sent it regular mail. Yeah, we're going to get to that too, and that might be something we need to change. And if it didn't come in, we didn't know it until the deadline, because we didn't send a second notice. now most of them come in during that 3 month period, and we can assess them before the deadline. But when they didn't come in, what the person would get from our office after their deadline was a letter saying, you did not meet the requirements, you know, you did not return the form, your lease has been terminated. A large percentage of those people would call me, or most of them call me or email me, but most of them would call me in a panic and say, I got this letter, you terminated my lease, what's going on? And, you know, we have a conversation, and it usually would go, well, we sent you a form, well, I don't remember getting it, or, oh, well, maybe I got it, but I don't know what I did with it. And we didn't really terminate their lease, even though the letter said it. It was kind of held in a gray area for 30 days. If we didn't hear from them at all within 30 days, then I would terminate it, 30 days after their deadline. But if they called, we usually send them another form, because they usually say, oh, no, I meant to fill it out. You know, I sent it in. It must have gotten lost in the mail. And they put something down, and almost all of those would get approved. So, in essence, that 6% was almost always people that just didn't respond at all to the form, to the letter saying it was terminated, and that's a pretty small percentage. So we went back and used a more stringent criteria. So I'm going to tell you what we used, because we had to use something. We had to use some baseline. We had a discussion about this last month. So what we determined after talking to Andrew about public ground and what would be a reasonable expectation of productivity, a bushel of oysters an acre a year would seem to be a reasonable amount. But we lowered the standard even lower than that, and we basically said, we're going to look at whatever they put on the form. Planting, shell, culch, seed, harvest, and if all of those added together equal one bushel of effort per acre per year over 10 years, you could keep your lease. Okay? So doing that, our denial rate was 39%. So it went up from 6% to 39%. And I'll have to tell you anecdotally, I don't have the exact percentage, but I think Hank would back me up that at least 10%, maybe 15 more percent of the ones that we would have approved under that criteria were it was amazing how many we had, they were right at one bushel per acre per year for 10 years. 0.99, 1.2, there was a lot of leases that fell right in that. It was weird, really, that so many were, some of them were just, there was no way, and some of them were, you know, bushels and bushels of oysters per year. So we feel like that's a fairly, and we'll want your input about, you know, what the threshold is going to be, but a bushel per acre per year of effort of some sort, and we had to be a little bit creative with spat and seed that are tiny, you know, a bushel of them is not really a bushel, you know, I mean, we had to expand that some. But if we used a little bit more stringent criteria than that one bushel of effort, it could easily be 50% of all the leases we looked at, we would say don't meet, we don't think, the criteria. Now, there's still the loopholes in the code. We couldn't go down that road, but so far with this re-review from last year, because we realized about half, we think, of the ones that we would have denied, we would have really required some additional follow-up with the leaseholder, because they were kind of, you know, maybe if they gave us some more information, they just didn't put enough on there for us to really determine. And those are the ones that would take a lot more time. So they're very, very difficult to quantify. So to get down to the amount, yeah.
Maybe if I say it out loud, I'll understand it better. One bushel per acre per year of effort. If a person had a 10-acre lease,
mm-hmm,
and they had 10 bushels from that lease.
Yep.
And they were all in 1 year of the 10 years.
And that's a bushel an acre per year. That's, wait a minute, let me do the math.
That's a tenth of a bushel per per year.
Right.
Over the life of the lease.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is if they had 10 acres, in order to meet the criteria, they would have had to have had 100 bushels.
Yes. Yeah, because that would have been just one bushel.
When we had the meeting last time, there was some discussion about, rotation, crop rotation, and moving young oysters to other
and using grounds not for production of market size animals.
I'm just concerned about if you have adjacent leases and you move them, on a 3-year rotation, how that might impact. Was there any? I mean, you know where I'm headed with this. The discussion was about large stakeholders who had.
And I think that's valid. The problem is, no one in the past has understood that's the way they need to fill this form out and tell us that's what they're doing. We do have other than these percentages and bushels, we do have tell us anything else you did. And some people put, I bagless dredged it, I turned the shell over. I think we would give some credit to that. But most people don't. They look at the form and they try to fill in with the blanks and they don't put anything in the comment section. And some people do, but if you tell me this is part of my rotational, I think we're still going to have some latitude here in interpreting
this.
That
was my question. Was when
you can't
say
be
that
with
the
so hard and fast
the
criteria. But
criteria is one bushel per acre per year. But big but.
And this was just an exercise to try to give you a time frame, what it would take us to even look at these.
I understand.
No matter what the criteria is, we just try to set some base level so we could tell you time plus how we think this law might actually affect renewals versus the way we've been doing it.
But would it, I don't want to interrupt you, but now back to these criteria again, would the criteria, which based on what you're telling me, you used a more stringent criteria when you reviewed the 2018 lease renewal applications and came up with a 39% denial rate, which would probably require more investigative and dialogue time?
About half of those would really require more than we could put in it, because we would have had to call that leaseholder back up and say, do you have receipts for the shell, or even go out and maybe check the actual ground. If they say, well, I didn't save receipts for my shell, but I can tell you, if you go out there and check my ground, it's got shell and oysters all over it. But I didn't harvest any, and they have no harvest. So it's like, you got to give me something. And
plus
that
you
might
don't
require
really
some.
Have any historical data to know whether the shell is 10 years old or 11 years old or 15 years old or whatever, so. I guess I was just trying to get clarification on what kind of manpower it might take to investigate.
Well, I'm gonna get to that too.
Another question.
Yeah.
39%. Did you look at the leases compared to the mandatory reporting? Was there any mandatory reporting?
Yeah, I'm gonna get to that too.
Okay.
Also,
be quiet and lazy.
Can you introduce yourself for everybody, since I don't think you were here last time?
No, she wasn't on the committee yet.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So I think we ran through the names last time, but it might be good to go ahead and do that one more time since we're still getting new. So we'll run down the dais before we
hang continue. Hank Allen, J.C. Walker Brothers, Eastern Shore.
Mike Osterling, Shellfish Growers of Virginia.
Bev Letcher, Pleasure House Oysters.
Kim Husky, Cherry Stone Aquafarms.
Becky Kubin, City of Virginia Beach.
Russ Perkinson, Independent Riparian Landowner.
We're also going to run through the table for the recording.
Andrew Button, VMRC.
Ellen Boland, MRC.
Ben Stagg, MRC.
Rob O'Reilly, VMRC.
And Tony Watkinson, MRC.
And you have some other board members for your benefit. Jay Ford.
Mm-hmm. AJ.
AJ Erskine.
Tommy Leggett.
Tommy Leggett and Tom Perry.
Perry.
White Stern Oysters, which are not, they're not here.
And
She asked about harvest, and 10 bushels was the example. But you also counted placing a bushel of shell, or 10 bushels of shell, or 10 bushels of seed.
Yeah.
It wasn't just harvest. It was one or the other, just a total of one. So I just wanted to make sure it was clear that
we took all that and sort of added it all together.
And if it equaled one.
And then if it equaled up to a bushel. And like I said, we had to be a little creative.
My clarification point was if it if year one through year nine there was no effort, and year 10 there was 10 bushels, then it would be, I mean 100 bushels, then it would be 10 per year.
Right.
I understand that.
Yeah, and the law says any time during the 10, so you could load up at one end or the other, and the way I've interpreted
the
law.
That would address my issue about the discussion on crop rotation, you know, where you work a piece of you work a piece of lease for a certain period of time, and then you move to another lease, and you work that because you don't want to strip that lease or however you want to.
And we saw that in both our reports and cross-checking the mandatory reporting. We would see on the form, even though we write what amount of bushels, people would write out to the side. 2011, you know, I planted so many bushels. 2014, and at the harvest, it would be opposite years. You know, I harvested, some people were really detailed on them, and some people just put a big number. And they put any years, we just took the whole number and added them all together and divided by 10. And
well, most, just for the record, most of us, and maybe I can be corrected, but most of us have to keep the kind of detailed records you're talking about because we're not allowed to claim as a deduction of a business expense the seed we bought until we sell it.
Right.
So we have to know what seed we're selling, what year that we purchased that seed and put it on the lease.
Right.
Am I not right?
And most of the industry reports reflect that. Their mandatory reporting is, we'll talk about that a little bit, not totally in sync, but there's some exceptions, but I'll get to that later.
So in some of the coves that are far up in, you know, the channels of the Lynn Haven River, there are some of these general oyster leases that I think even if they made an effort, I think because of the siltation being so deep and I just spreading the shell and all that, do you in your analysis look at whether it's a totally fruitless effort just to put something on the form?
Well, we certainly haven't in the past because we didn't really take a real critical, you know, if somebody said they did something, we took them at their word, particularly claiming shell on it because we have no way to prove that. Now, mandatory reporting, obviously, if they put a lot on there and it's not, there's a problem, you know, one way or the other. In a polluted area, that's becoming more and more difficult to prove that you produced a lot of oysters if you'd had to have a relay permit and everything else. So I think the intent of this law is to get at that, and I think the problem in the Lynn Haven will, over the next 10 years under this regime, it's going to be very difficult for some of those people to continue to hold those leases. A lot of them held them by transferring, adding another person to the lease during that 10 years, and their 10 years start over. Well, that's been changed in the law, too, now, so that they can't wait till the very end. If they've already been denied renewal because they can't meet the criteria, the law clearly says we can't even let you transfer. Now, if they waited till the 9th year and 6 months, then they haven't gotten their form yet, and they realize what's going to happen. They can't meet it. They could still try to transfer it. But under the current law, we have the ability, and this is getting beyond the 10-year renewal part, to deny the transfer. Because we're going to ask them, what have you done for the last 9 years and 6 months? Mm-hmm. And if they can't sort of meet that running criteria or whatever it is, we're going to say, you know what, we're not even going to allow you transfer it. And that's going to cause some real problems, and people are going to be upset. But that's the way I believe the law is written, and that's the intent. So, and the transfer is much more expensive, too. It's not like you just transfer it for $10 like you could before. It's going to be a minimum of $300. It could be $500 or $1,000, depending on the acreage. So,
I think there's going to be an effort. Like, if they know, there are obviously not going to be any harvest records. If they just consider it as part of the cost of their lease to go out and do one bushel of effort per year, per acre, you know, some of these are pretty small, you know, 10 acres or less.
Well, again, this is just the base criteria we use. This doesn't mean it's necessarily the criteria we're going to use going into the future. But I still think in leases in that situation, it's going to be difficult. Certainly someone's got a 3-acre lease way up the Western Branch, and they got plenty of money. They can buy enough shell to technically meet even this low criteria, putting enough shell on it every year.
That's really the intent. I mean, if
and
you
right, out, and that will attract oysters. They'll get spat if there's a,
exactly.
What's wrong with that? That's
nothing.
But will it? I guess is my question. If they're actually doing it, I'm just curious if they're doing it just for the sake of filling out the form as opposed to actually cultivating an oyster.
Well, and I mean, this is the problem with
mandatory reporting is one thing, mm-hmm. and it's mandatory, even though it's not. I mean, you can still not do mandatory reporting. You don't have to.
I don't think that.
But buying and selling shell
is a small effort. It's not a small effort. It's a big undertaking. It's not just, you know, no matter how much money you have, it's not. It's not like it sounds, a small undertaking to right. put shell out.
Finding the shell is still an issue.
Yeah, and very expensive. Yep. Very expensive.
And to echo what Ben was saying, this was just what we did to get through this exercise. And the broader conversation around renewal criteria will follow this. We had largely decided last meeting also internally to split those because we think we can get a regulation on the renewal fee through a lot faster than sort of an agreement around criteria. But what this does show is that whether we need input from you all, but there will inevitably be some criteria because you will just have to go through these renewals. So it's very helpful to hear this feedback. But again, to echo Ben, this is not anything we're wedded to. It's just to do the exercise.
So this was hypothetical, I understand, but since I'm not in the industry, I know what a bushel looks like. I'm well aware what a bushel is. As far as harvest, is that reasonable to assume, let's say somebody's doing bottom plantings, hand harvest in shallow water, is that a reasonable reduction to achieve over a 10-year period, 10 bushels? Or I realize somebody with bottom gauges shouldn't be any problem whatsoever meeting that. But
well, just sort of for reference on public ground, roughly 240,000 acres of public ground. The average of the 75,000 or so acres that are open to harvest every year is about a bushel or more in most years. So that 240,000 to 300,000 bushels, that level of effort comes off about, this is sort of rough numbers here, about 75,000 acres of public ground. So I think that's sort of a reasonable comparison there for public ground.
But if that's on a three-year cycle roughly, so you really, and I realize not every acre of public grounds gets harvested first off, so you got to consider that, but it still would be like a third of that, I guess. And I wondered if, I know this is hypothetical, but you may want a little different criteria depending on whether it's bottom cages or just hand harvest or whatever. But I do like the idea of somebody plants, especially if it's reproductive oysters, and they get credit for that, and make them do something. There is some benefit to that, as you pointed out.
So I don't want to get too bogged down in the criteria because we will discuss these in the future, how we're going to do that. My plan is at that meeting, I will give you some what other states do, which would be, I think, enlightening, okay. How much production requirements some other states actually require, not just production, but planting. Jeez. Up front, shell, seed, and you got to hit it. And it's not 10 years. A lot of states is less than 10 years. You got to do something or they'll take it away from you before 10 years. But that's we have to talk about it a little bit because we had to use some criteria to come up with. But in essence, what I'm trying to get you today is how much time we think it took us
right.
using the criteria we used, whether it's the right one or not, and what these percentages come out to be and what it costs the agency. So you can have some input into what you think we ought to charge because we can charge up to 300. That's what the code says. But we're supposed to charge what it costs,
right?
Not just pull a figure out of thin air. So I'm going to run through a couple more of these things that were brought up. So as expected, leases that were approved using the new law criteria didn't really take much additional time, although we did discover that there was quite a discrepancy. It was the exception rather than the rule, but it happened often enough that it jumped out that what they put on our form did not match their mandatory reporting.
Are you really surprised?
More often, and sometimes it was actually off in the wrong direction. What they put on our form was actually less than their actual mandatory reporting. But more often, it was the opposite. And all too often, in my opinion, they put down a considerable amount of harvest on my form and they had zero mandatory reporting. Zero. That's a problem for me. But I've got to renew their lease based on what they put on this form. And there's a mandatory reporting requirement that they're supposed to be doing. Mine is it's a mandatory form that we send that you have to fill out, but the information is, they're just giving us what they say they did. The mandatory reporting is, you're supposed, if you harvested oysters, now this is harvest only, it's not planting a shell, then you are supposed to report it. And you can be found in violation of current regulations if you don't. So that did happen. So our policy right now is, when I get one of those, I am taking it to Rob's shop, Fisheries, because that mandatory reporting is housed inside the Fisheries Division, giving them my form, the checklist, the very next to the last question, mandatory reporting, yes or no. And what I do with those forms is, in that one, I have to check yes or no, but I'll write in there. You know, 2011, they harvested in versus what they put. And if it's a discrepancy, I'll write a net out to the side. Refer to mandatory reporting. And I make a copy of that, my form, and the checklist, and I give it to mandatory reporting, Stephanie Iverson, and say, you might want to follow up on this. And when it's enough harvest on both of them, there is some mandatory reporting, but it's out of whack, and it's the wrong way, I'll refer it. I'll approve the lease, because obviously they hit the mark either way. But once where they didn't, I'm going to hold, they're going to get pulled out of my pile and they're going to sit. And the deadline's going to pass, Russ, probably, on some of those. And I'm not going to terminate them. I'm not going to approve them until we get a little bit of resolution of what's going on with the reporting. But that's more time, okay? Mm-hmm. What I'm factoring the cost of this at the end does not include any of that time for Rob's shop. Now, the big document does, because it's an overall effort of the whole agency, application transfers, tenure renewals. But this will take some legwork in Fisheries of time. And maybe we should include that in this.
So you're only doing your time, not Fisheries time, only half
of
that.
I don't know.
Time.
I have no idea. They've not had a chance to figure out, you know, how much time it's going to take them to really follow up on these.
So it's typically, everyone has the opportunity to say did not harvest in a particular month.
Right.
And if someone gets flagged because they've done no reporting, including not even tell us they did not harvest,
right,
they get a postcard.
Right.
Then they get another postcard, and everyone knows the third postcard is a
charm.
Right there. You get to be here.
Yep.
So, yeah, this is going to open up several new events for Fisheries.
So that kind of covers those. So some of the increase in denials also didn't require any extra time. They didn't return the form at all, or they put zeros. They put zeros on everything. Well, it's pretty not too hard for me then to figure out what I got to do. But about half of the denials, you know, I think would have required some additional time or will in the future. We couldn't do it retroactively in 2018, but, you know, we're going to have to contact the leaseholder. So we, because it's the form is not going to be filled out in a way that I don't want to deny it, because I'm not really positive that they don't qualify, but I just need more information. And it's hard to quantify what that's going to be, because I don't know yet.
Which, based on the statistics you gave earlier, would be about 5 a month.
Yep. So we figured on average these take about 15 to 30 minutes to review everything we have to look at. So Hank and I have been doing them together right now, and we did all these 2018 ones together. I think either one of us could do them individually in our areas. Hank could do the shore and I could do my side, but we think right now to put two eyes on it is better. He knows his area better than I do. I know the area on the western shore better, kind of know people, I know the ground, I know the areas to some degree. I don't know them all by any stretch. So that's just our time. There's some clerical time involved in this, in creating the form for our office manager, mailing it out, postage, all of that is part of this, has always been part of this, and we charge nothing for it. It was just part of our budget. And a little teeny bit of mapping time. The leases that are denied get taken off our map, it's taken off our electronic map. So Royce Bridger, our cartographer, his amount of time per month is very minimal, because there's not that many per month that get terminated. But I factored that in, too. So that's how I kind of factored the cost in at the end. So for the ones that we did think needed additional information to make a valid assessment, it's hard for us to estimate really what that is. It could be several hours of additional time required. It could be days if we may on occasion have to go out and actually check a piece of ground, especially if the person's pushing, saying, look, I put a lot of shell on this, you know, I'm not having a lot of success with harvest. I've had some freshwater advances killed my, but, you know, and I don't have receipts for my shell, you know, but, you know, how much are we going to, you know, bend over backwards to go out and check it? But we could. We could actually physically go out and check the ground, probe it, you know, oh, yeah, you know, it's really good ground. It's got a lot of substrate on it.
That's a given. That's the max at $300.
Well, and we'll get to that, too. But that could be, yes. What? It would cost us more than $300 to do those. Again, I don't think that'll be the vast majority at all. It would be the minority, but those can drive the cost up for everybody if you average the cost of so much. But I can't quantify that so well. So to summarize this, we looked at all of these. We used this criteria that I explained. We estimate based on our salaries, some overhead time, my salary, Hank's salary, Deborah's, Royce's, that our cost on average, okay, knowing that there's some factors on these hard ones, it was around $100 per lease. But that we figure if you add in all these anomaly ones, which is going to be, you know, half of the denial, if it's 40%, it's going to be about half of those. We're going to have to do some additional work of some kind, probably, to really vet them the way they should be. That it could push it up to $150 easily. So that's kind of our current recommendation, that we're looking at an average cost. Now, since the review fee, the way the code's written, I don't see any way around this. I don't see any way we want to invoice these people after the fact, particularly if we're going to tell them we get ready to deny their lease. When we send this form, it's going to clearly say, you must return this form. You must return it by the deadline. We think we should send it certified mail, we think. Maybe 3 months, maybe 2 months in advance. Maybe 3 months is too far out and people lose them and don't send them back. We're open to y'all's input. But some of these things I think we really need to think about. Certified mail for that form. The form clearly has language in it. Here's the criteria. Here's the new law criteria. You must send this form back in before your deadline. There will be no grace period in the future. If we don't get this thing by the deadline, if we get it on the deadline, you know, obviously we have some time to process it. We're not going to deny your lease. If you get it to us before the deadline, we'll accept it and we'll evaluate it. Then the chips fall wherever they fall. But if you don't, you won't get a letter saying your lease is terminated. Call me and I'll send you another form. You call me, and I'm going to tell you, your lease is terminated.
Sorry.
Your option is to request a hearing before the commission to contest your denial, because it's a commission decision. Every commission decision is reviewable by the commission. But they'll have to ask for that and be put on a commission agenda. Come in and explain to the commission why they didn't send the form in, you know, what they did do, and then it's a commission decision then. They can overturn staff and say, reinstate the lease. And we have a mechanism to reinstate leases in our system already if they're terminated for some reason that we determined was incorrect and they need to be reinstated. So that's kind of where we think we are on how this could work. Let me finish one more thing.
Yes.
I know we talked about a max of 300 for the really complicated ones, and I know there was some discussion last month about, well, the industry people, when it's clear, they're mandatory reporting, you know, boom, 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 you can review it really quickly. They ought to get a break. We can have a staggered fee, but I won't know what it is until after the fact, because when I send the form, I know nothing other than the name of your company, and I might know something about that. You need to send this form in by the deadline, and you just send us X amount of money to review it. So we feel like an average, if we could come up with a consensus for an average cost, charge everybody the same, average the cost. That's how we've always done restakings. We averaged our hourly time. We even for applications in the past when we could set those fees, you know, we would average, do average costs to try to figure out what they were. And they've been changed in the code over a number of years, but they were, a lot of that was based on, you know, what it actually cost us. So I think that's about all I need to say about it. I will say that if $150 was approved in a regulation, that would, we would expect to raise about $45,000 in income from that, based on the number we would review per year. That's equal to about a position, which we think this is going to impact us. You know, it's taking my time, Hank's time. Deborah was doing the paperwork already, so that's not a new thing. But it's going to increase our time spent on it, and the ones that take more work, but the surveyor may have to go out in the field and check it. That's his time. That's time we're not doing the other things that we're already tasked with doing. But this money does not come back to us. It just goes into the general fund. So you could argue next year at the General Assembly that we need more funding because of this, and we'll talk about the impact of new applications and transfer. That's some more time we have to spend looking at those. But, and this document talks about all three. So you'll get to read this before the next time. It basically says we need more than one person. We need maybe three people and a boat, another boat, to get out in the field and look at some of this. But just for this, just for the 10-year renewals, bottom line is $150 max, what we're recommending. Average cost, everybody pays it. You have to pay it up front with the form. There's no...
I missed a jump here. I thought it was $100.
Well, the $100 is the cost to do the ones we did with none of the ones we have to do extra legwork. So we figure that's, we really, it really should be higher than that, because there are going to be ones that it's going to take us extra work.
That was part of my question. I was going to try to clarify exactly what we're after. You want to have one amount put in the letter, whether it's going to Jerry Stone or Joe Schmo.
Or Ben.
Well, I don't know if I want to characterize it. Is that what I want? But
that's what
the way the law is written.
That's the way you're going.
Because yes. If I have to invoice people after the fact,
yeah. No, I don't think that's going to work.
Oh, I need more information from you. And by the way, I need $300. Yeah. And in the end, I'm going to... take your lease at the end.
So to clarify Ben's point, I think it's what we need. Like right. We, based on the process that they went through, from an internal standpoint, it needs to essentially be one fee. We need to request it up front. And one moment of logistics, this room is actually double booked today, so we will need to be out of here by about 5:15, 5:20. So we've got a few left minutes for discussion. Just want to let everybody know that.
Okay. All right. You're still going to have some discretion in evaluating what they put down on the forms, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that there's no way around that.
Yeah, we
with
need
the loopholes are in the code too. We have to consider MSX and Dermo. Is it adjacent to a productive lease? Has it historically? We still have to consider all those things. Now we don't have to agree with right. with what you put, or that MSX and Dermo is a real problem.
I am concerned about the leases that never show any harvest, are never mandatorily reported, but they are integral in the business of that company. Now, you're probably going to know the company.
Right.
So that's why I'm asking. You're still going to have some discretion and leeway when you evaluate your form and they say that they didn't do any of these things.
Well, I heard last time, clearly, I believe Deputy Commissioner Dolan said that, you know, if there's a place on the form for comments and you're using an area that's
right.
that you've had
for seed.
Historically, mm-hmm. and it's condemned, you can't harvest, but you're using it for educational purposes, so you put it on the form, it's going to be considered. Did I not hear that?
Yes.
Yes.
That's a benefit.
So Kim and then Jay.
So, and I would think the backup in all of this is that you all are not going to deny a lease that you think has the potential to come before the commission and be overturned. That therein, in my mind, is your discretion.
Right. I think if we're on a borderline, we're going to go back to the leaseholder
right.
and have a dialogue. And with that dialogue, if I'm comfortable that they're giving me some more information that's useful and that I realize, well, it's still, they're kind of right on the edge, but if I deny it, they're going to go to the commission.
Right.
Probably it's going to be a waste of everybody's time.
Exactly.
I don't think that's the purpose of this law, but
that's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah.
It's effort. It's not harvest, right?
It is effort.
Right.
So,
Jay, Becky, then Russ.
Wait, two things. One, I understand we're still going to come back to this definition of beneficial use.
Yep.
Correct. So we're not, that isn't, I think your concerns, Mike, are going to be addressed in that conversation when that process comes about. The second thing I wanted to bring up to everybody is, are we completely taking the idea of using the fee to clean up our leases off the table? Because I thought that we were supposed to consider some numeric value in raising the fee for transfers and renewals in order to serve as a deterrent as well. So right now we're just calculating staff time for MRC, but are we taking that calculation completely off the table, since I think part of the hope here was there was going to be additional grounds available on the other side of this process, and we wanted to kind of scare off people that were sitting on leases for no reason with the fee in of itself. Is that, are we moved away from that as a consideration factor?
Yeah.
So to clarify, really close to that, the sort of the more deterrent bad actor fees that were set in code, and those were set for permits and transfers. The language says such fees shall seek to reflect the cost to the commission of processing the renewal application, but shall not exceed $300. So the transfer fee is absolutely hopefully going to be a deterrent, as should the original lease, but at least the way the code is written and the way we are reading it is this has to reflect the cost to the
agency.
And as Ben went through, the cost can be pretty broad depending on the application, but this reflects the cost. The transfer and the permit fees were for deterrence. Becky, then Russ.
So when you were calculating your clerical costs, you said that you're going to start sending these by certified mail, which you haven't been doing. Did you include that in the cost? Because that's a lot more than,
yep.
Okay.
It's about $6 per letter,
right,
to send it certified. And there's some additional legwork with clerical to track those,
right,
and keep track of did they accept it, did they not accept it. I did time, I did certified letter, tried to calculate even the paper and the amount of envelopes, and because there's going to be, everybody gets the form in an envelope, and everybody's going to get a renewal or denial letter in an envelope. First one will be certified. The second one will just be regular mail if you're getting renewed, I think. I don't think we need to send that certified. If they sent something back, you know, we know their address is working. So it's,
The problem
with certified is some people won't sign for it because a small percentage, but they won't sign for it because they think it's something they don't want to accept.
Our office, we usually, if we send a certified mail, you send one regular mail first, like immediately before or simultaneously, so that they know what they're getting.
That might be a good idea. I mean, we could do that, but
that does increase.
In fact, that cost in though.
Yeah, that does increase the cost. And then my next question is, if you are going to expect to have more of these go to a denial, which means a then challenge or an appeal, are you factoring in the appeal cost, or is that under a separate? Is that part of this renewal effort, I guess, and is it something that you should be including if you have to have an advertisement?
I did consider it. It's hard for me to factor, though, how many will do that and how much time it will take. It should be relatively straightforward. We looked at what they gave us. We denied it. They can bring whatever they want to the hearing that we've never seen and present it to the commission. You know, most of them, we're going to say we denied it based on what they sent. And their option is to appeal it. And then they come to the commission, make their argument.
You're at those hearings anyway, the meetings
anyway. Russ and then Kim.
Yes, good thing about waiting so long. Call on me. I thought of more things.
Okay.
I'm going to be pretty vocal on this committee because I guess I'm the only person that maybe represents riparian landowners, although I'm sure there's some other riparian landowners on the committee. but they may be more tied to the industry or what have you in one way or another. I've talked to some other folks and get their input on some of these items we're going to be talking about. Talked to some other leaseholders or some leaseholders that I'm aware of too, try to get their ideas and I guess some thoughts there. I think that deadline to apply, I would really recommend you put that in regulation, how many days ahead, so you don't have a legal challenge problem with that. So I think whatever you want to decide on it, I think I would put it in your fee regulation, like I mentioned. Secondly, the cost issue, I personally don't think we ought to be doing anything to run the real small producer out of business any faster than is going to happen anyway. So I don't think it's really fair for somebody that's got 4 acres, a 4-acre lease, and some people have several of these small, real small leases, versus somebody that may have 250 acres speculatively, and that they pay the same renewal fee. I don't think whether it's $100 or $300, it's going to deter somebody that has 250 acres in a single lease. It'd be fairly expensive to some of these real small producers. So as I mentioned last time, I think it's okay to think in terms of averages, but I would still favor a scaled fee that on average works out to what you need, but has some multiplier based on size or some thresholds. Third point I'll make is I know you did a quick preliminary analysis, but if you're supposed to consider all the factors in 1205 now in looking at your checklist, when we get to that point, I got a few things I'd suggest you add to the checklist and some be broadened out. And I think those may take, if you did any of them, will take more staff time to renew these leases than possibly what you figured on. So that's, I guess, my third point is when we talk about the checklist, considering maybe some of this additional information. I assume that's going to be a separate discussion, so I won't go into specifics at this point. Thank you.
When we turn in our annual rent fee at the bottom, it's how to use this ground, it's yes or no. Is there a spreadsheet? Is that linked to anything? I mean, do people fill out, obviously mandatory reporting, but do they fill out, do they give you more information like 10 bushels and is that recorded so that when you go up, when you pull their record for 10-year renewal, that does that come up at all? Or it's just yes that they use the ground? They said yes for the past 10 years or no?
I can answer that. The quick answer is no. We used to record it. If you put yes or no, it was actually in our database, a place to fill that in. And not to get too bogged down in the weeds, but we used to use Access as our database, if you know anything about Access. And the way it was set up by the guy who programmed it, which is not me, I'm not a programmer, it got captured, but it was all in one field. So every year it was yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, and it was all lumped together, and you couldn't even see it once you printed the form because it was a column, and it would push them all together, so it was almost useless. We migrated to a different database now, and that's not even captured anymore. So, I mean, that question probably should just be taken off the rent statement. We thought it would be useful at the time we created it to help us with this 10-year renewal thing. But then once we realized the mandatory reporting happened with the Worcester ground, that while a yes, no, I use the ground is somewhat helpful, I guess, even though it didn't quantify anything, we knew we'd capture the harvest because people would start having, and we knew at some point we'd have 10 years of mandatory reporting, which we do now. We're more than 10 years in, so we have that. So,
but maybe if there was a way to capture it on a yearly basis, then it'd be easier when the renewal came up that you would have it saying, look, for the past 10 years they said this, that we shelled, we seeded, we shelled again, we harvested in 3 years. Or or something like that.
Yeah, we could reincorporate it back into the rent form. We'd have to get our programmer to fix our database so that, but Deborah, when she would get the rent statements, that was in addition to just taking the check number and entering the check number and crediting the rent, she would check that in the database. But when we converted to a newer database, which has been, 15 years now, that kind of got dropped, and so I don't think it gets captured at all anymore.
Because these are simple questions, but that's a lot of information you could get for the past. I'm sitting here going, holy crap, it would take me a long time to...
Yeah, we get that complaint. You know, I was supposed to know what I did 8 years ago.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You know, I don't even have to. I don't have my taxes that long.
Captured it while you were paying your bill.
So it's not. It's not a bad idea.
And then for the mandatory reporting, can you get a 10-year report, like what we've done for the past 10 years on a lease? Is that capturable?
So here's what happens when I review them right now. I have a link right in my Oyster Ground database to mandatory reporting.
Okay.
It's called a production button. Mm-hmm. I open the lease number, I can see a map of it, I can click a map of it, so I can figure out where we are, and they give me some information, and I can click production, and it immediately just takes me right into his system. It shows me all the mandatory reporting, all the way back, as far as it goes.
Because I can see somebody...
Harvest data.
I can see somebody being off on their renewal harvest if they're just going, oh shit, okay, let me just... 10 years. Let me just guess what I have compared to your actual numbers. Either way.
Right. And what we think we're seeing already in looking at these, I've had two or three where on the Eastern Shore it's clams. Thousands of clams, you know, hundreds of thousands of individual clams, and it's zero mandatory reporting. And I'm like, well, we think and we know over here on our side, on my side, I've talked to a number of leaseholders that have adjoining leases, and they have folks that work for them, and they're reporting it all on one lease. And the guy said, is that going to be a problem? I said, it's already a problem if that's what you're doing, because you're supposed to be reporting on the actual lease. And if you have a lease that's here and another one that's relatively close, but one's in the upper James and the other one just happens to be in the middle James, and we have an illness, and they reported it all on the upper James one, but the actual oysters came from middle, the health department's going to close the upper James and maybe not the middle, and that's not even where the problem is. So we're seeing that that's going to happen, and it's amazing. Some of the mandatory reports are actually within a bushel, and it's hundreds and hundreds of bushels of their on my form with the mandatory reporting. So they're obviously they're keeping track of it. Like you said, you have to for all kinds of other reasons. And then other people are lazy, and they put down something, and I look at the mandatory reporting, like, whoa, this is like way out of.
Well, I have to say, you're talking about some of the smaller, you know, watermen, that paperwork is not their favorite thing.
Oh, I know.
Or their forte.
Me. Not mine either.
Forte.
I do it all day.
Their forte. You know, the notes that they made today are floating down in the river, you know.
And their dress rushes.
With their flip phone.
So when this law was first put into effect, way back, 25, 30 years ago, the 10-year renewal, leases used to be 20-year leases, and there was automatic renewal. There was no criteria. They just automatically renewed. Anyway, the chief engineer at the time, Mac Rogers, had a meeting to discuss, how do we do this 10-year renewal thing? What's the criteria? And the thing that popped out in that very first meeting was, there should be a recreational-type lease, a small lease, 1 to 3 acres. And we should look at that differently than we do most other leases. So even back then, and there were some numbers of how much harvest and effort there ought to be, and we've had some internal discussion about that with this new review, that merit, and this is, again, getting beyond just this fee for today, and we're going to discuss the criteria at a future meeting, but, you know, that is, we understand that. There are people who have 1 or 2 small leases. They are making some effort on them, but maybe they're just growing them for personal use. They're never intended. And what's wrong with that? I mean, I think we have to acknowledge that there are some people who want to have
farm.
A recreational yep. lease and not be commercial. And is a bushel an acre a year effort? Is that still seems like you should be able to meet that? But
yeah.
Well, we have to look at that in the whole big picture. So.
But we have to be careful for harvest for having somebody run in a cache operation on refrigerated shellfish harvest that's not getting reported and captured in one way, and somebody gets sick or
absolutely.
An illness happens, and then there's it's not captured anywhere, and that's what scares me.
The problem may be that 1 to 3 acre guy has no idea what shellfish sanitation rules and regulations are, or does he even try to adhere to them, and that's
I agree, but he's under the same rules, and he
right.
should.
Exactly.
Right.
Jay?
Not putting myself fully behind this statement. I'm just making it as a devil's advocate. But I feel like we've been beating around the bush on this question for a while when it comes to exactly these types of leases where we all feel like, man, it'd be really terrible to take so-and-so's grandmother's lease. But there's a question there that we've all been really kind of loath to answer, and that's what is in the best interest of the Commonwealth when it comes to managing these leases? And it cannot be continue to be such a gray area, because that's really what's gotten us into this conversation in the first place, is that we left it so gray that there is no delineating line. And so I get it. I don't want to shut anyone's grandmother's lease down, but I feel like for the purposes of our conversation, we need to start to narrow what it is we think is the best and highest use of these leases when it comes to the Commonwealth. And I know nobody wants to say it's tax revenues, and I would like to say it's water quality, but there has to be something. And if we're saying it's one bushel per acre per year, I think that's something everyone needs to have a conversation about. But we have been functioning in a gray area for a long time, and I think that gray area is very beneficial when it comes to allowing for industry's practices, and we need to make sure we have a definition that gives them the leeway they need with their leases. But I do think we're going to capture some of these leases that are just been in families for a while, and that's it's tough, but there's got to be a line somewhere, and you know, we can't keep kicking that conversation. I know nobody wants to be the bearer of bad news, but it's going to have to happen one day or another. I feel like you all know that we're eventually heading towards some delineating line. But that's just devil's advocate.
The people I was thinking of actually do produce, so but they're small. Maybe they got another job somewhere, and they just do this as a hobby to lose some money on or something, but it's or make money. But the ones I'm aware of are making a legitimate effort at it, but they're small, and I have the concern about the fee and that economy of scale type of thing.
Tim and then Mike.
Whereas I do respect those comments, in the essence of time, today are we here to discuss what the average fee that VMRC would
that
be.
That was the primary thrust of today. We will definitely have
so we'll like your input on that.
So
the criteria and
Jay,
the little guy. And
yeah,
what
I respect that conversation.
We had to use a base.
Right.
And that I just wanted you to understand I used something.
Right.
So I could do a time. And it doesn't matter. If it's 100 bushels per acre per year, I don't think it's going to change the amount of time it takes me to evaluate it. You either put it on the form or you didn't.
We need to be discussing today if $150 renewal fee is a pertinent fee.
And if it's one fee, which I think you understand our rationale why
right.
we think
yeah.
it's stupid.
Right.
A bunch of staggered fees is going to be a nightmare to administer.
Right.
I just want to respond to Russ's concern. If they're legitimate producers and they're trying to make a buck, $100 fee is a tax deductible item.
$150.
Once every 10 years.
Once every 10 years.
No matter the size of the operation.
$300 would not be that bad for most operators over a 10-year period, but in this particular one, the transfers and the applications, we definitely are trying to get the bad actors out with those fees. I think that was the purpose of the $300,000, $500,000. But this clearly, the way the code's written, we're supposed to charge no more than $300, but we're actually supposed to charge what we a reasonable cost we think it's actually costing us to do it. And
following on what Kim said, you essentially suggesting that $150 per renewal is the fee that would cover all the scenarios right now. Right now.
Right. We're going to have to reassess over time. Once we start doing these and doing the extra follow-up and mandatory reporting gives me a better idea of what it's costing you, I think we can include that cost as part of it because it's really interrelated. But and reassess it. But
yeah. I mean, to clarify Ben's point, I mean, I think that captures most of the cost, but there's definitely going to be some cases where it pushed you got sent someone on the water, that's boat time, that's staff time, doesn't cover the cost of appeals. So we're trying to sort of capture the probably more the median, a little less than the average. Jay, then Becky, I think, and then Russ.
I was really going to just try and move us to calling the question since I feel like we're there. So if there's other concerns, I'll let them speak first.
Well, in terms of like calling the question, our goal of the day was to get input from you all as our advisors, and we can go back and draft a reg, and we will send that out in advance. We largely wanted to know if we were in the ballpark, or if there was going to be sort of a pretty extreme reaction to that. So I don't.
We're good with 150.
Okay, we can pull people.
I was just going to say, it sounds like you've done your homework, and I'm good with 150. Okay. But I would put into the regulation a specific time period that you're going to be reviewing it each time because I think it's going to, as you're moving into this new system, it's going to take some time to kind of equalize. And then after that, you will have a pretty good idea of what it's going to cost you every year. But rather than wait for it to spontaneously come up, I think it ought to have a, you know, certain time period where you're going to review it, whether it's, you know, 6 years or, you know, whatever.
No, I think that's a good idea.
Russ and then Mike?
Yeah, I'm not good with 150 yet because I don't think we've talked about this checklist yet and what some people think ought to be reviewed for renewal of a lease. So we've talked about benefits a lot. We haven't talked about impacts, although you get impacts on a lot of these checklist items. And I think that's going to add some cost to you potentially for having to do these renewals. If you're really trying to capture, account for it, and have enough staff, and I realize it's not, you're not, it's all going back to general fund, but maybe you can get a budget amendment to get some general fund money for to cover a position or two or whatever.
Well, let me make one comment.
So I don't think, the last thing I want to mention with this is I heard the word bad actor, and I don't know exactly what you think bad actor means something to me, may mean something different to you folks. When I worked for the state, it had something to do with regulating these big confined animal feeding operations, you know, like big hog farms, poultry farms, that sort of thing. So I've got an idea what we considered a bad actor as far as agriculture is concerned, but it seems like you're using the term bad actor to mean somebody that doesn't which is still, you know, still relevant, but somebody that doesn't produce or something of that nature or doesn't extend effort. And I think the term bad actor should be broader than just not producing.
So I'm sure that's going to raise some comments. So let me, I think you raise a good point that maybe we don't want to call the question yet until we vet a little bit more of this questionnaire. So let me explain what the questionnaire is. It's pretty straightforward. So
the checklist, you mean?
The checklist, yeah. I'm sorry, I don't know what I called it. But anyway, the 10-year renewal, for VMRC use only checklist. So the first thing that happens is we write the lease number on it, we pull up the lease. So these first set of, most of these first questions are 1205 questions that was added to part of our review of 10-year renewals, new applications, and transfers. We're supposed to consider those six factors in 1205. To review these is pretty fast. Almost none of these ever apply. You know, is either SAV in the lease or there isn't. Now, what does that mean when I check yes? It means I look at the lease, and if the whole thing has SAV in it, I consider that in my review. Does that mean I'm going to turn down the renewal?
Probably not necessarily, because you can have SAV in a lease. We leased ground before there was an SAV policy. You can dredge it legally if it's 3 acres or more. We're not thrilled about that, but you can, because you're dredging through. But you can. Channels, we don't lease federal channels. I do consider if a lease is split right down the middle by a channel in a 10-year renewal. And what, you know, am I comfortable renewing that? There are possibilities here, and we didn't do any of the 2018 ones. That's another one where it takes more time. Should we tell the person we're not going to renew it, all of it? We're going to cut it in half, or we're going to take a chunk of it out because it's in a channel. And they can't realistically expect to use it, and it's going to cause a problem if the channel is dredged in the future, if they need a dredge permit. And I think that's our opportunity to adjust the lease. The way that 10 years are written, we can renew, deny, or we can modify the lease. But again, channels don't impact most renewals. Piers, I look at every, when I bring up that aerial photograph, when I'm looking at the lease, which is right in my database, I look. And sometimes I see there are 15 piers in this guy's lease now. How much is that impacting his ability to use it? Now, I don't think at the moment we're going to deny a third of a lease that has piers in it. We could chop it up. But often the leases, the piers just go in the first part of the lease and there's an offshore section, and it's sort of self-regulating. They can't dredge it. The piers are too close together. They can't get in there and dredge it. They probably aren't using it. We're still leasing it. Is that the best use, Jay? I don't know. You know, maybe we should redo every one of the leases, but you're talking about a whole lot of work for my department if we got to resurvey every lease that has one pier in it, carve the pier out. Adjacent properties, if a lease goes up to shore, I check yes here, and I look at it. Is it populated? Is it unpopulated? I mean, this is why it takes some time to do these. These things are quick to look at, but each one takes a little time to assess, and I'll write comments in here if I see something that. These are cumulative. I look at all of these at the end. Wetland impacts, that's almost always no. If you have a lease that has a wetland impact, something's wrong. You've surveyed up on the land, or, you know, there's an accretion problem having something. Other reasonable uses, you know, I factor that in some. I kind of know my water bodies. I know how they're used. I doubt I'd ever deny a lease, you know, unless somebody built a marina over top of it and they weren't the leaseholder. You know, well, okay, there's another use. Impact other marine fisheries resources. I look at that, but that's kind of a broad spectrum. And of course, managed reporting is very clear. That's not a 1205 thing. And then my recommendation. So I'm happy, Russ, if you have other things you don't think on this list, but these are the things that the code, the 1205 things are mandated. So that's why they're on this list. They're on the application internal checklist. They're on the transfer internal checklist. We're supposed to look at all of those 1205 factors every time we look at a lease now, a new lease, a transfer of lease, or a renewal of a lease.
I wasn't suggesting we take any off. I'll send you an electronic version or something. I'll give you a hard copy here I got. But I'm thinking some things that would be helpful to add. Possible compliance issues with current lease. And I realize some of that you may be, you know, you talk about mandatory reporting is an issue. That's kind of one element of it, but it's like evidence of noncompliance with lease conditions, laws, regulations, including 4BAC 20-335-10, you know, at sequential, such as evidence of production, seeding, you know, it's some of the things you've mentioned, but also I'd say presence of unpermitted structures operating outside lease boundaries, that sort of thing. Probably ought to be considered as far as compliance with the current lease that I think ought to be considered in adjusting or, you know, either renewing or adjusting a renewal of a lease in the 10-year period.
Russ, can you explain that, please, a little further?
For example, I can give you some good examples of this, but it's, you know, this aerial photography can indicate a lot of things, can't indicate everything on this list, but it gives you some indication. USDA used aerial photography for a long time, since 1937, to check compliance with farmers, you know, if they set aside enough crop acreage for set-aside programs, various things, because they can tell from crop patterns what crops are out there, what season, that sort of thing. You can tell a lot. I've noticed these, especially the SAV, the low-level aerial photography. You can tell a lot, and that's year by year. You can't tell much if somebody's doing a dredge operation, and you probably can't tell much if they're hand harvest. But if they're into cages or floats or something like that, they show up on the aerial photography. And you can kind of see where the area is, where they are, if they're right up against somebody's dock. You know, it's a good, and you probably look at that already, but you could tell other things, like are they outside the boundary of where they're supposed to be operating. So I think things like that would be, you know, I'm thinking it takes a little bit of time to click through 10 years worth of the aerial photo sequence. I mean, you can do it very quickly with the VIMS site now because they got the lease lines on it, but you can tell right much looking at that information. So that's kind of an example of what I would suggest needs to be looked at. You know, I've got some other examples of things maybe to look at as far as impact on adjacent properties, but I'll send you, not, you know, some of these I'm not suggesting need to be spelled out on the form. I think it's just things you could consider in making your comments that ought to be, you know, looked into and considered. So I think if you're really going to account for what's in the 1205 and the benefits and the impacts, and I think it's going to may take a little more time to do some of these. So I'm not, I'm happy to give you a copy of this and you can see what you think and consider it.
And I do look at, like I said, I look at aerial photograph on everyone, and trust me, we do see structures and clam nets that are outside of the lease boundaries often. I don't know that necessarily impacts us renewing it. Maybe it should. But we do follow up on that with law enforcement.
Law enforcement. Yeah. That's law enforcement.
They're outside their boundaries. They're illegal.
Sure, but that is a bad actor situation. And, you know, what I would define a bad actor is somebody that's, you know, harvesting outside their lease boundaries.
Sometimes it's
okay. You think it's okay to let them harvest?
No, absolutely not, but I don't think it's done for the most part intentionally. Mm-hmm.
And if you have if you have any unpermitted structure, the VMRC police are going to stop and talk to you about it, and they're going to issue you, you know, some sort of warning, and it's going to result in you not doing that, whatever that is. I mean, that's what they're out there for.
I think law enforcement does an excellent job of covering the issues that you just brought up.
I think,
and I can pass that along to law enforcement. They always like to hear that. As we go through this, I think also, I think there was an idea that someone had, and I forget, you know, putting in this that we will review and revise this every certain number of years. And I think some of these issues will come up. And now that we have more scrutiny on these renewals, we can also keep track of a better sense of how many structures are we seeing outside of a lease. You know, how many times do we just send law enforcement out there to pull them off? I think it will overall help improve monitoring and understanding from mandatory reporting all the way down to structures. But again, this will likely be an iterative process. But that's very helpful feedback to have. There's a bunch of hands up. Like, I think it was Mike and then Jay and then maybe Kim. I don't know. I feel like some hands went down. So Mike and then Jay.
First of all, I do not think that the renewal form should be used as a law enforcement tool. I think that's improper use of renewal. And a long time ago, I was going to ask, since the last meeting, it's been a month, have you had some renewals come in, and how did you handle them? I'm just curious.
Well, that's a good question. I've actually had some industry, what I'd consider industry leases, that I have denied. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten a phone call. And one in particular, I won't tell you who it is, I denied three leases. And on the form, they had no harvest. They did write in the comment section, lost orchards due to freshets for a number of years. And this was in upper reach of a river, which is entirely possible. So when they called, I said, well, you know, this is what you put on the form. And in the end, they conceded, well, two of the three at least, I really haven't, you know, produced any horses right. on them. And I guess it's okay. You know, I think they were really going to fight them all. The other one was surrounded by some of the, it was a really small lease and was surrounded by some other leases that were larger that I approved, that they had some, and I, we're still talking about that. He's going to send me some more information on that one. But, so I have turned down some in this month period because I'm reviewing, I'm still reviewing them, you know, as they come in.
Guesstimate how much time you had to spend?
I think it's still within, you know,
still within these time frames.
I mean, the conversation I had with him was 10 minutes on the phone when he called me, and he's going to send me, you know, revised information on that one. The other two, you know, are terminated. So,
Jay, did you have your hand up?
I'm good for now.
Okay. Any other thoughts or comments or questions? This is really good input for us to go back as we work on the draft reg.
Do you want a consensus on a figure from this group?
If you guys have that, that would be great. We don't need that to move forward because, again, this is one of the ones we were required by law to do. So this is advice we're seeking from you all as our advisory committee. But if you don't reach consensus, we will still move forward, to be blunt. It will, I mean, we will report that out when we go.
A little sidebar with her.
So, 2 points of clarification. If you guys, because this is new, if you guys take a vote on that, we will report that when we give this to the commission. It's not that we ignore that information or we just are like, thanks, but no thanks. The second thing is that, and we didn't do this last time, is that other committees that we have a chairman and have a vice chairman for someone who can take votes and call those questions, so that's not us doing that. So if you guys would like to elect a chairman so we can run that process more formally, that would probably be helpful. Kim?
Do we have a quorum today?
We yes, do.
You do. There's 6 out of 10. Okay. So.
Why don't we
have
seven.
A show of hands?
I was going to say, why don't we do a show of hands, and that way we know. I think $150 is reasonable. I'll hold my hand up.
Two, so that's 6-1. Okay.
You're a no, right, Russ?
I'm a no based on I don't think you've fully considered what you have seen what I'm going to give
well,
you.
This is a starting point.
I think
we'll consider that as we're drafting the regulation.
My suggestion is a minority report, I guess, in this case, not knowing how this will turn out with the staff time, that for a 250-acre lease, I think it ought to be $300. If it's a very small lease, let's say under 5 acres, I'll just make up a number, $50 roughly. I think if you want to make the average work out to 150 across the board, which I think is low, if you really consider some of these, I heard the comment about that's an enforcement type action, but this section of the code does say it's supposed to be considered, these various factors, water quality, adjacent property, all these things supposed to be considered in renewing a lease. And I think some of these things I brought up are part of that equation.
Kim and then Ann.
My comment to a 250-acre lease being $300 to renew, oftentimes the size of the lease is easier to renew because if you have 250 acres, you are no doubt probably working it very hard, either commercial wild harvest oyster or other methods. And I would almost feel the opposite, that oftentimes a smaller lease might cause more research to renew than a large lease, would be my only comment.
Yeah, I was going to comment on it based on actual cost of what MRC feels, and so that's the figure you're coming up with. then I agree, and I think larger leases are on the
yeah.
Yeah.
But I have to, I think a certified mail, I like Becky's comment of sending regular mail and also certified mail saying that, and also letting them know that a certified letter is coming so they don't panic when they go to the post office. I think that would be huge.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Then you know that they got in when they have to come up before the commission if they decide they can, you can, they can't leave, oh, I didn't get the letter.
And
I think where the lease, I think you make a good point about the 250 acres as far as the benefits side. Of course, depending on where that 250 acres is and how many conflicts are associated with it as far as how many impacts that are maybe not benefits to consider too. So some of the larger ones may have more negative impact as well. They may have larger benefits too.
So just not to beat a dead horse, but a quick analogy for size. I understand Russ's argument, but also over the years, we've always been allowed to charge what it costs us to survey new leases. That's the only thing that's not set in the code. And we've gone round and round on how to do that. Should we do it by size? Should we do it by the number of corners, amount of time? And because it's, again, we don't want to have to invoice, you know, crazy stuff. We've always used sort of averages, and we did use size for a long time. 0 to 5 acres cost a certain amount, and it was incremental by size. But we felt that wasn't really fair because we could survey a 3-corner, 250-acre lease in an hour, and we could survey a 5-acre lease in a creek that had 38 corners, and it took 2 days to survey it, particularly in the old days before we had GPS. And was that fair, you know, to charge the 250-acre guy more than the guy we spent 2 days on? No, it wasn't. So we've over the years just averaged the cost, and that's how we kind of charge. We charge a flat survey fee now. And it's, while it's apples and oranges to some degree of a survey versus evaluating a lease, this, you know, if I bring up an aerial photograph and it's a 5-acre lease and there's 4 piers in it and it's right up against the shore and it has SAV in it, you know, I'm going to spend a lot of time looking at that one versus a 250-acre lease out in the middle of the James River. I know it doesn't have SAV. It's too deep. You know, there's no impact to anybody else. It's out in the middle of nowhere. It has 3 corners, you know, and it has production. I'm not going to spend but so much time on all 6 of those questions. It had no wetland impacts. It had no adjacent property owners. It had no SAV. It has no channel. Yeah, so it's hard. It's not easy, you know, to figure what you should charge and how to do these, but I'll leave it at that.
I think okay. The legislature was pretty clear on what you're supposed to do.
Charge for the cost.
Right. I mean, if I did all this work, and I'm not complaining, but you know, if the legislature said you can charge up to $300, period, I just come in and say, let's charge $300. It's simple, you know, it's easy. But they said, charge what we think it actually costs.
I would echo Becky's comments that I think you've been extremely thorough with it, and I would fully support $150.
Mm-hmm. And again, as Rob said, this is a starting. You know, if we see in 1 year that it's way out of whack, you know, we are spending way more time, then we can come back and ask to modify
it's a regulation and not a code.
Right.
Right. And that's just a commission action. It's a couple-month process. Ask for a public hearing.
Yeah.
Advertise it.
But it could go, it actually could go the other way.
Could go
because once a lot of these are not automatically renewed, it could go the other way and maybe
yes.
Less time. We just don't know.
It's
correct.
Possible. Yeah. This, I really think this will fundamentally change over time how people do these because the word will get out that we're looking at these differently. You need to fill out the form better, answer the actual questions in a way that is coherent, and don't make us have to call you back and go through all of that. And hopefully it will also spur people to do more if they really want to use the lease the way it's intended to do, to use it the way it's intended. And it will get some leases out of some hands and maybe into the other people's hands that will use it. And there's some ground that just should not be leased. It's not being used, and industry's not going to pick it up either.
Condemned.
So it's no good.
Any other thoughts or questions? So I talked with Ben, and because we just brought up the idea of a chairman and a vice chairman this meeting, what I'm going to recommend is that we will put that the next meeting we have, I think it would be good to vote that in, so we have more direction, we have some direction from you all and can do things like calling votes, so you don't feel like we're pressuring you to do that. And then in advance of the next meeting, the second thing I thought of is one of the things that would be also helpful to hear from you all is as these laws change, as we implement these regulations, we push them out in the papers, we talk about them in meetings. That may not be enough to get that information out there. And so what I would really like to hear from you at the next meeting are some thoughts on how we can educate people on the changes we're making to make it easier, when they're sitting in the forum to know that there's more information that needs to come in. They're giving better thought to record keeping. I think that would be really helpful for us to hear from you all at the next meeting.
I just made a note to send a message to my members to fill out the form.
Council of Virginia Watermen's Association
okay.
and the Shellfish Growers
yeah.
of Virginia.
Okay.
Big star.
Okay. Jay.
Just so for reference, how did the agency handle or the commission handle the enactment of legislation from this year with the emergency clause for fee change? Was there an education outreach from the commission?
There hasn't been yet, partly because, like we shared last time, we're still working through this, and we're still trying to figure out some of what we're doing. The fee increases obviously went into effect, and those are sort of happening, but it hasn't been something that I have thought about and Ben and I have talked about of how do we do that. Mm-hmm. But honestly, a lot of it was just initially figuring out how to do it internally, because this is a market change of how we do business across the board, and Ben and Hank and others really have taken on the lion's share of this work and have done a lot. And so
I think we did put at least a brief notice on the website of the changes. All the fees are now on our, if you go for a form, all the fees are upgraded, the forms are upgraded, they have the fees built into them. There's a fee sheet also on the agency list that shows all what we charge. It's difficult, other than spending a letter to every leaseholder or including it with their rent statement this coming year, which won't go out till July. The problem is that new applications, it'll affect some of the current industry because they continue to apply. But most of them know it, the industry players. Transfers, while we do a lot of transfers a year, 100 or plus, some people will have a lease for a long, long time and never transfer it. And, I don't know what the best way to get the word out is to the people that really need to know, but
let it be a surprise when they
Trust me, we've had a few people come into our office to transfer a piece of ground, and they knew what it was, $10, and we tell them it's $500 because it's a 20-acre lease, and they're like, "What? When did this change?" Well, back in, I wish I had transferred this 2 months ago. But.
And that was reason it was emergency, Becky.
You may want to think about, because you have the boxes that you check on the rent form to include with the rent request a statement about what records they need to be keeping and just kind of a reminder.
I'm definitely going to follow up. That was a good and see about changing the form and changing the database, because that would be very helpful to have yearly data. It's timely. People know what they did that same year. They can put it on their rent from the previous year, the rent.
If it's beyond mandatory reporting, if it's
shall
or
see.
You still have to spend something at the end of the 10 years, to get it renewed. But.
And in addition, on your website, and just having the new fee information is great, but you might want to, if you have a new application form, have a sample one filled out with some of the different types of information so that people can see how it might be filled out differently now.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
I don't know if it needs to be required, or I would just have it optional for the yearly and just disclose that it might be easier when it comes to doing your 10-year renewal.
Right, yeah, I don't think we will. We wouldn't say we're not accepting your rent if you didn't fill this out.
Russ?
Yep, most of this, regarding your question about a chairperson, most of the state advisory committees I've ever been involved with, especially when we got into regulatory issues, mm-hmm. state agency ran, the meetings. There's a few cases where it wasn't the case. The agency generally recruited a chairperson as someone that didn't have a dog in the fight with it, a neutral party, like a facilitator, to run the meetings. I'm just wondering if it's necessary or not to have a chair. The other point I'd make in terms of voting, you know, voting's it's probably a good idea to get some idea of how people feel about different issues. You know, one side or the other, various perspectives. But if, you know, if you vote, you know, one, I don't think the agency is necessarily bound by the vote. Two, it is an advisory committee. We're supposed to be offering advice, and that advice may be different from different people on the committee. So I would ask that the agency consider all input and try to go back and make the best of it as you can as far as what the agency thinks is right based on all that input.
And you're correct on that, that we, I mean, we say this for all of our advisory committees when Rob's done FMAC, that you are advisors to us, but at the end of the day, the agency has to move forward with the regulation, you know, taking into account a variety of factors. If there were a vote, you know, we would report out on, you know, who voted no, who voted yes, sort of what was the broader consensus among the parties. We would present all of that when we went to the commission with the regulation. It's also when we would present public opinion, because these will go out for public comment. And at the next meeting, if people want to come and comment on it as well, we can do that. But that is very helpful to hear.
Now, for sure, Rob was going to jump in here, but he didn't.
Well, I would tell you that most of the advisory committees split from one central FinFish committee, you know, one FMAC, actually, Fisheries Management Advisory Committee, and always has had a commission representative as chair up until about 8 years ago. Our FinFish committee does have a non-commission member, but the Shellfish committee still does, the Crab committee still does. That's sort of the kind of thing that you started out with there, talking about that. But, you know, again, that's kind of a difficult situation at the times you're meeting to maybe pull that off, to get someone from the commission to do that. And Tony, for your Habitat committee, how do you do your chair there?
As I thought about it, it was generally a commission member that was on the committee that chaired the meeting.
Yeah. So that would satisfy part of what you're talking about, but, you know, depends on the flexibility of the commission members too.
I kind of assumed Ellen was our leader.
Yeah.
Terrible assumption. Never make that assumption.
Never. Well, I think that's what we were operating under. But today, when we talked about voting, I started thinking, well, should we have it?
The other advisory committees generally, as Rob said, have a right. commission member as,
we don't.
As the leader.
Well, the dual purpose is that commission member then is sitting on the commission right. and can report out
correct
very well. So
we will try. I nominate Ellen.
That backfired.
We will try to represent your votes in a fair, impartial way, and the dissenting votes.
Dissenting votes.
You talked about August, June, and July deadline month, so that means we need to get together quickly again.
So we had talked last month, for the first 6 months, given the body of work that we had, we are going to try to meet every second Monday. And so that would be June 10th. And so what I will do for the next meeting, and I will get this email out this week, is send you the dates. So for June, July, and August, and we can run it to September. That way you have a better sense of the dates, and it's not just one-off. I should have done that in the beginning. And I will also try to capture some of the key points that we had here and then what the next steps are. And again, the July time frame is it is quick. It is our goal, but our goal as agency staff is to get a good regulation, and that's what is our driver. So that will be our focus versus, you know, really hammering to meet that deadline. But that is our goal. Any other thoughts, questions, comments? Thank you guys as always for your time and for your input. It's very helpful.
We're on for June 10th.
June
3:30
to 5:30. I will send it, yes. And before you go, I need some information from you. You're not in trouble. You're not in trouble. Everyone has that look.
Okay.
Could have done that.
Their hooks are holding on.